Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mattsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find all of our episodes on podcast over on iTunes or search for Dog Works Radio online, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. We're going to talk today to Andy and Kristen Pace. They're calling in from Healy, Alaska. They run a kennel called Hay Moose Kennel, and they're on the line now. Hi, guys. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I am doing well, thank you. Kristen, can you guys, are you guys on separate lines or what are you doing?
We're on speakerphone on a cell phone, which is the only phone we have.
Oh, no problem. So just hand it back and forth if that's okay. And Kristen, if you will, just introduce yourself. Tell us a bit about how you got involved with mushing, and then we'll do the same to Andy.
Sure, okay. My name's Kristen Pace, and I got started in mushing by working at the National Park Service Sled Dog Kennel in Denali National Park. I got an internship there right out of college and worked there for a summer. And then once I, you know, started to get to know the dogs, I got totally hooked on the idea of moving back to Alaska one day and running a dog team. So I came back a few years later, got one of the wintertime mushing gigs at the park, and got to volunteer at the Iditarod while I was there. And, man, that totally changed everything. And everything in me said that I needed to run the Iditarod. So the next winter, I worked for Jeff King, and I had the pleasure of being his handler and learning a ton from him and training up his Iditarod team with him in 2011-2012. And I guess from there, it all just went downhill, and we got a few puppies from Jeff and started our own kennel, four years ago, and now here we are.
Awesome. Andy, what about you?
Well, it's pretty similar, actually. I came up here just under 7 years ago and ended up working for the park and doing some volunteer work just to see how the dogs worked at the park, and it was my introduction to them then. And just kind of got into racing through that, just seeing it as an opportunity to see country and kind of connect with the tradition and the culture of this place.
So one of the highlights of folks coming up to Alaska is visiting the sled dogs there at the Denali National Park. Can you guys tell us a little bit about that tour, what it's like, how many dogs that they had there when you guys were there? And, you know, what can people expect when they stop in and see a sled dog kennel there?
Well, the cool thing about the Denali Park kennel is they're trying to show the world what the very best possible dog kennel could look like. So when I first went there, it was my first time ever being in a dog yard. So I didn't realize that not every dog yard in Alaska cabins for each dog with hand-engraved nameplates and baskets of flowers and beautiful pea gravel-lined walkways. I mean, it's an absolutely beautiful dog yard. And the cool thing about their demonstration is that they use all the historic gear. So they have this super old wooden freight sled on wheels that's lashed together. You know, it's all traditionally made. And then the old leather harnesses, you know, that almost kind of look like oxen yokes.
right.
And the park rangers there, they do a really good job of relating how these Park Service dogs are kind of a living history, that they're carrying on a tradition that has been going on, you know, since before the park became a park. And since the park is designated wilderness, there's no motorized vehicles allowed. So in the wintertime, they patrol that whole 2 million acres of wilderness within the park by a dog sled, which is just an awesome way to show that, you know, that traditional way of life and those traditional skills are still relevant.
So what is one question that came up every time from the tourists? I'm sure you had a bevy of them every day when you guys are working. I'm sure there's one that's probably the most popular.
Oh, man. Well, it's been about 6 years since I worked there, maybe more. but I would say, you know, they always asked if the hill behind the kennel was Denali, which always gave me a pretty good laugh. And then, you know, they would always ask about the cold. And I think probably my favorite part, though, was the questions they would ask before they saw the dog demo. A lot of people really didn't believe that the dogs wanted to be doing this. You know, they thought that dog mushing was cruel and that we were forcing them to do it. And then, you know, just to see their faces as those dogs even just saw the harnesses come out, you know, I mean, all of us know how excited dogs get just to know that they have the opportunity to run, and to see that whole 35 dog yard go up barking and howling, you know, that changed so many people's minds about mushing and just, you know, how what the dogs feel about it, which is that they love it more than anything else in the world.
Cool stuff. Andy, if we can switch gears a little bit, Keeley, Alaska is just north of the Denali Park there, I guess, what, 10, 12 miles. How come you guys settled there, and what are conditions like in the wintertime?
Sure. Well, I settled here because I came up and initially ended up in Homer working at a fish processing place while I was working on my doctoral dissertation, which I still haven't finished and probably never will. Sorry, Mom and Dad. But I just started applying for jobs all throughout the state, just thinking to myself that this would be a great way to see country, would be to start working for the Park Service and seeing what else Alaska had to offer. It was always my childhood dream to live up here, so I figured why not make the most of it. So I applied for a job and ended up working in the Communications Center here, which is the regional communication center for all of the Park Service in Alaska, and worked there for 5.5 years or so before I switched over to being the terrible carpenter that I am today. So it was just a job that brought me here. And once I got here, it spoke to me, and I think it spoke to Kristen in a similar way. She's a Texan and I'm a Midwesterner, so for us, having this sort of wide open space that we have here on Stampede, which is where we are in Healy, surrounded on both sides by mountains that just drop off into wilderness as far as the mind can wander. It's just a spectacular place to be, and mountains are incredibly important to both of us. So it's kind of a no-brainer.
It is an absolutely beautiful place as you leave the park there and head north on your way to Fairbanks. It's one of those sites in Alaska that is just a showcase of our state, I think. What is the weather like there? How much snow do you guys typically get? And are you able to run out of your yard, or do you have to travel a ways?
You know, I wish I could say that there was a typical answer to that. A couple years back, I would say that it was the best snow in the state. We had friends coming down from Fairbanks and Eureka to come train here because we had such a good base of snow. And typically, we are able to run straight from home, which is one of the huge draws for us of living here and being so invested in our community. But the last couple years, Healy has not been so great. There's been seemingly a sort of a cutoff line around Nenana where the snow stops falling and it starts warming up. We had about 5 or 6 thaws last year. So we spent an awful lot of time in the truck going down to Cantwell and running on the highway like everybody else in the state. Just relying on the kindness and generosity of the Bondi family out at Alpine Creek, that's for sure.
Yeah, like you said, I think all of us were running over there on the highway. I think they received more dog team traffic than they did snow machines, at least this past year, at least in my opinion.
Oh, sure. Every time we were out there, that sure seemed like it was the case. I think there was one night we had, it wasn't a race or anything, and we just had 16 teams out there. It's an incredible opportunity for folks like us who are sit at that table and listen to all these people who have been doing this for a lot of years, talking to their handlers or talking amongst themselves, and you just sit and listen, you can sure learn an awful lot.
I totally agree with that. Kristen, if we can, let's talk a little bit about your guys' dog yard. How many do you guys have? You said you got some puppies from Jeff King. Is that your primary lines, or do you have others mixed in?
I would say, so we had the idea that we wanted to have a dog yard of no more than 30 dogs. We had 27 dogs, And we wanted to have three bloodlines. We did a lot of research and a lot of looking around before we ever started our kennel. We decided we wanted to have Jeff King, Mike Williams Jr., and Brent Sass dogs. So that's what we have. We got those four puppies from Jeff that first winter that I worked for him. And then we did a breeding with Mike Williams Jr. and split the litter. And then the following year, we trained Brent Sass's yearling team and got to keep half of them at the end of the year. And that left us with those three awesome bloodlines. And now we're just breeding within our own yard to try to create this super dog, which, I mean, if their performance in the Quest is any indication, I think we've definitely gotten onto the right track.
Well, those three names are definitely a who's who of today's Iditarod. Everybody knows those names when you talk about them. What are you looking for in a dog, either Andy or Kristen here? Are you looking for that typical husky-looking dog? Are you looking for a little taller or smaller dog, male or female? What do you guys prefer to run? Maybe it's a question for each of you.
Well, we knew right off the bat that we didn't want to just race. We do Arctic expeditions every spring, and then also out here in Healy, the wind blows so much out here that you're breaking trail all the time. Like, you're not just running on these nice, smooth, groomed trails. The dogs are doing quite a bit of trail finding and trail breaking. So we knew we wanted to have dogs that were especially tough and long-legged. We like bigger dogs. Our yard has 2/3 males and 1/3 female, but not for any particular preference. Our dogs are pretty furry. They really love the cold weather. On the Yukon Quest last year, when it got down to, I guess Scott Smith's thermometer said 67 below, which made me very grateful I didn't have a thermometer. you could see dogs with shorter coats not dealing as well with the cold, but man, our dogs just loved it and just didn't seem affected by it at all. In fact, I think they felt invigorated by it. So I would be worried about our particular dogs in a super warm race environment, which seems to be unfortunately kind of becoming the norm these days. But as long as it stays nice and cold and, you know, the trails are tough and deep snow, I think we'll be great.
Awesome stuff. Let's talk a little bit about your guys' racing experience and maybe a story or so. I know, Kristen, you had mentioned the Yukon Quest. If we could start with Andy, first off, I got to make a clarification because I don't know without looking at my computer here. Aren't you guys running, one of you guys is running the Quest and the other Iditarod, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I'll be running the Quest and Kristen will run Iditarod this year.
All right, so let's start with you, Andy. What have you done in the last few years, and how did you do?
I have done very minimal. I did the Yukon Quest 300 2 years back. That was my only race that year, and I came in ninth. I was the Red Lantern. 18 started, 9 scratched, and that left me right there firmly in last. And I absolutely loved it. That was my first race. It was just beautiful. It was a delightful run pretty much the entire way. I only had a couple little snags where I was getting down, but otherwise I was just smiling my way through everything. And then I ran Copper Basin last year to see what that was all about, and I made a lot of mistakes in that race, and my dogs were patient with me. We were splitting up our dogs between us, and someone ended up shooting fireworks at my team when I was leaving Chisto, and it really kind of messed the head of my leader up. And then my other main leader, Littlehead, came up lame on the same run. So I did a lot of leader training for the entire race. I was on my feet running for about 160 miles of that race, I think.
Wow.
And so it was a really good learning experience. It was incredibly humbling at a time when I needed to be humbled. But it got me qualified for the Quest, which has been my primary goal. So I'm really looking forward to that trail now, especially that Kristen has shown the dogs how to do it so well.
And Kristen, how about you? What have you done in the last few years?
Well, I did the last running of the Sheep Mountain 150 back in 2011, and that was with Jeff's team, his second team of dogs. So the famous Barnum and Bailey were on my team. We all did our very first races together, and we had an awesome time. And then I did the Copper Basin 300 in 2014, and I did it again in 2015. In 2014, I also did the Chattanooga 200, which was a blast. I hadn't done a race in March yet, so that was really awesome to see, you know, how much fun it was to be in warm, sunny weather running dogs where it stayed light late. And then, of
right.
course, the Yukon Quest last year as well.
So I guess my next question is, how do you guys manage to do this together day in and day out? We're a family mushing kennel here, and sometimes we get on each other's nerves and, you know, argue and bicker and back and forth. How do you guys manage? Is it a nice equilibrium, or you guys kind of do your separate things?
Well, we have, I think the way we manage is that, you know, we both work full-time for the Park Service all through the summer season. And so, you know, we're both, like, kind of separately at work all day long. And then we come home and just look so much to spending evenings with the dogs and all of our weekends with the dogs. And so that's, like, always the highlight of both of our day. So there's
right.
really no, like, argument there. And then in the wintertime, you know, we do live in a one-room cabin that's 16 by 20. And so we, you know, during drop bags, oh, my goodness, it's kind of a nightmare in here. And booties strung up all through the rafters and everything. It can definitely be stressful. But when it comes to actually running dogs, we definitely have some pretty firm rules that have seemed to carry us through many years of running dogs together. So the first one is we never talk about anything unless we've eaten. And if one of us seems to be, like, getting into a bad mood, we stop immediately and eat something. We always eat a second breakfast before actually going out on a training run. And then as soon as we decide who's taking what teams, we don't speak to each other. And then we go about our separate hookups, and basically we say, see you later, before we even harness our team. And then get our harness, go out on the trail, and then once we're out on the trail and everything's going nice and smooth, we turn around and wave to each other and have a conversation.
You know, that's Dr. Phil-worthy advice, if I say so myself, Kristen. Andy, do you have anything to add to that, Andy?
No, I think that covers the training aspect. The other kicker for us is that we handle for each other, and we have discovered in that process that it's very important that the handler does not speak unless spoken to, because that can be an excruciating process to watch your wife or husband come to a checkpoint sleep deprived and kind of stumble his or her way through a process that you as a handler, with that extra, you know, whole hour or two of sleep that you have such a firm grasp on, you know, obviously. So it's a
right.
that's a definite your rule that you stand aside and you do not spoke unless spoken to. You can't give advice unless it's asked for.
So, Kristen, let's talk a little bit about the Quest. I'm sure it's still firmly in your mind, and I want to get to you guys' website here in just a second. I was reading quite a few of those stories before we went on. How was that for you? It was very, very cold for you guys, especially in the early parts of the race. How did you feel that you conquered that task, and do you feel like you had a good run overall?
Yeah, man, I think that seriously not having a thermometer is a great idea. Ryan and I were talking about this a little bit, you know, like we were just, ignorance is bliss, you know, when we were cold, we just put on another layer and kept moving and running alongside the sled and kicking and, I think it helped a little bit that my brake kept falling off my sled. Like, I kept shearing a bolt on one side of my brake. So I had to stop and fix it, like, barehanded out in the cold over and over again. But I actually think that the stopping and moving around and fixing stuff helped me stay warm and kind of kept my mind engaged and kept me awake not like I needed any help doing that with the amazing jumble ice that was on the trail this year. I don't know if you heard about it, but the Canadian side, they sure had an amazing time getting, you know, cutting through some of the ice around McCabe. And then on the Alaskan side, you know, the trail between Slavens and Circle, I just don't even know how the trail breakers did it. You have to hand it to them. That was pretty awesome. But I think the proudest moment of that race for me was coming into Dawson with my entire 14-dog team still. I don't think anything can top the pride and happiness that I felt coming in there. And then getting interviewed by a bunch of people and then the dogs howling and barking and harness begging to go, even still right there, that was just awesome. So, yeah, I think the cold was all relative, and like I was saying before, the dogs didn't seem to care about it. And then once it started warming up, I ended up running with Lance Mackey for about 500 miles. I mean, we caught up with each other about 45 miles outside of Dawson and then ran the whole rest of the race together. So that was a story in itself.
That is good stuff for sure. Guys, we have about 8 minutes left, and I have one final question in regards to mushing, and then I want to talk to you guys about how you keep your fans updated. My next question to both of you guys is, how do you guys prepare to run the Quest and Iditarod, which are only separated by a couple of weeks? And you have a relatively small dog yard. You said you had 27. Is that right?
That's right.
So how does that work in terms of logistics for you guys?
Well, we're going to find out. You know, we talked a lot about that in terms of how we want to have the dogs overlap in the races. And we've decided that the dogs that have already run 1,000-mile races, either with us or with Brent, they are eligible to run both. And those who have not run a 1,000-mile race, we're just going to sort of arm wrestle over who ends up with those dogs. That's if you talk to us again, then that's when it's probably going to be a little stressful.
And then, I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt,
Ed. Oh, that's okay. I was just going to say, in terms of the logistics of getting all the drop bags together and everything, we went through that process last year with our sort of typical aversion to asking for help. And I think this year we're going to ask for some more help. We're incredibly fortunate to have a very generous community of friends that are all fans of the sport, that are mushers themselves, and that really have enjoyed contributing to our kennel. So it's gonna be a good year in that respect, to sort of rely on friends and get them in here to help pack drop bags. We'll try to hit everything all at once in terms of Iditarod and Quest drop bags, and hopefully that'll be that.
For our fans that don't know about the drop bags, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, but the Iditarod drop bags are due while you guys are out on the trail on the Quest. Is that right?
They are. And you can have a proxy do it, is my understanding, but we need to solidify that. I know for Cody and Paige, for instance, they've had it in the past where one of them handles for the other and then leaves halfway through to go get the drop bags in. So we're going to have to figure that part out, for sure.
Kristen, do you have anything to add to the question there?
No, I don't think so. I think I remember last year doing drop bags to the Quest and crying in our kitchen, looking at Andy saying, oh, my God, this is so stressful. We're never doing this again. And he looked at me and he said, but we're going to be so much better at this next year. So I'm hoping that the same thing can hold for what we're about to do. It seems crazy to do both races back to back, but so many of our friends have done it and they've figured out systems, and we have the, you know, super advantage of learning from them and not having to reinvent the wheel.
So for our listeners that are listening in tonight, Kristen, why is it so stressful? Can you tell us a little bit about that process of getting these bags together, and why does it take so much time, energy, and effort from everyone?
Sure. So it's kind of like mailing things to yourself, mailing provisions to yourself way in advance. So you're trying to imagine what the future you is going to need and what your dogs are going to need. And that is the only, you know, outside those are the only things that you're allowed to get, you know. So it's really stressful because what if you forget a whole bag of booties, or what if you don't pack enough food? You end up having to rely on the kindness of other mushers, or if you're not good at asking for help, you do without a lot of things that you might need. You know, it's stressful because you only have this one chance to get it right, and then those bags are sealed and shipped off. And, you know, you just have to hope that you put everything you needed in there, or you're willing to carry it in your sled for 1,000 miles.
Did you forget anything last year on the quest that you absolutely had to have?
One thing I really wish that I had was something to sleep on, like a little foam pad or something to insulate me from the cold. Because on the quest trail, I slept on the ground with the dogs 5 times, and, you know, in temperatures ranging from 70 below to 20 below. So I slept on the straw curled up next to my wheel dogs, but there were a couple times looking over at Ryan and being like, man, I wish I had brought a foam pad. That would have been such a good idea. I don't know why I didn't do that.
I think that's a great idea. Guys, we're just about out of time, and I want to mention your guys' website. As I said a few minutes ago, what an awesome way to connect with your fans. It's such a cool layout that you guys have. Did you guys do the artwork there? And if so, how did you guys get the inspiration for that type of website? It's different than most you see out there.
Yeah, we thought about what we wanted to do with our site for a long time, and we're very fortunate to have very talented people in our families on both sides. The website was designed and laid out by my brother, Jason, who lives in Seattle. He did all the drawings. He did a lot of back and forth with us about what we wanted to present. And what we told him basically in our first conversation is that we wanted to portray a sort of whimsicality and have it sort of be scrapbook style. And then, you know, people will go onto it, and most people really love it. Some people think it is depraved of color, but that's okay. That's what the videos and the pictures are for. And on Kristen's side, her brother Jared has been really generous with his time and talent as well, and he's put together all the videos that we have on the site and linked through our Facebook page. So, yeah, we've had just a family effort on all fronts.
I think it's a great-looking site, and I do want to commend the whole family effort there. It's heymoosekennel.com, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
So how can folks get in touch with you guys other than your website? Do you guys have a Facebook page? Are you on YouTube? How can people connect with you guys?
Our Facebook page is very active, updated all the time. We also have an Instagram, heymoosekennel, all one word. And we also have a Hey Moose Kennel channel on YouTube.
Cool stuff. And as we mentioned a little bit earlier, Kristen is going to be running in Iditarod coming up in March, and Andy's going to be running in the Quest at the beginning of February. We'll definitely watch out for you guys. If you guys can pull it off, I think you guys are going to have some stories to tell. What's the future for Hey Moose Kennel? Is kind of play it by ear, year by year, or do you have bigger and better plans in the works?
Well, originally we thought, let's just run a mid-distance race to see if we like it, and then we loved it. So we thought, let's just run a 1,000-mile race to see if we like it. And then I loved it so much that I told Andy there was no way he would be the only one to run a 1,000-mile race this year. So now we're signed up for both. And I think that things are just exploding for us. Like, every year there's more and more and more we want to accomplish and achieve with the dogs. And I don't think it's something that's ever going to get old. We definitely want to build our life around them and continue to do that like we already have.
Well, guys, I wish you guys much success. Maybe we'll talk as we get closer to the mushing season, and we'll definitely keep our fans updated on how you guys do. Thank you very much for being on, and I'll make sure I pass over the links to the show once it airs here on the radio, okay?
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for thinking of us.
Thank you, guys. Kristen and Andy Pace calling in from Healy, Alaska. Hey Moose Kennel is the website. Make sure you check them out both on the web and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube as well. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
Thank you so much.